This is Han Solo, and you're listening to Octo Radio, a Star Wars podcast. I don't know. Fly casual.
What is going on, everyone, in all corners of the galaxy, and welcome back to Octo Radio, a Star Wars podcast. Or if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. You picked a really good one to start with, a really topical one, because there's been a game sort of taking over the fandom space and causing a lot of excitement and positivity, and it's a game that has been long awaited. This will be a day long remembered, to quote a Star Wars character that is not so nice. But we're talking about, of course, Lego Star Wars, and we're diving into one character specifically and the career of one person, one guest who is so graciously joining us today. You know him from not just this iconic franchise, but also from the Voltron franchise, also from the Back to the Future franchise with his appearance in that game playing Marty McFly. But for our purposes today, he has voiced, well, first of all, he's voiced a couple Jawas, I understand. There were some Jawas in the credits, but mostly, of course, we're talking about everyone's favorite scrum rat turned smuggler from Corellia, Han Solo, my favorite Star Wars character in the Lego specials, in the Skywalker Saga Lego game, and then also in Forces of Destiny, and we'll talk about that as well. It's AJ Locascio. How you doing, man?
Hey, what an intro. The Jawas, I forgot about that. That was a really funny. I saw that in my script, and I was like, you just want me to say Utini? And they were like, yeah. So I was like, all right. And then they did whatever they did to it, and it sounds like Jawas. So that's pretty, it was pretty crazy. Yeah, I'm more excited about that than anything else. It's like, I have to voice a Jawa.
Two iconic Star Wars roles going all the way back to the beginning, Han and the Jawas. It's true.
And the Jawas, yeah. And then also, anytime they have us do just like a random stormtrooper, I'm always like, I get to be a stormtrooper. Like, for some reason, that breaks my brain. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Han is already brain breaking, but then when they say also, you get to say, like, these aren't the droids we're looking for. I'm like, what?
Because you're like filling out the world at that point.
Yeah, it's wild. I got to be one of like the Sith troopers at the end of episode 9, and it's weird to see, like, I was beating a guy up and I was like, oh, that's me, I'm beating myself up.
Like, yeah, you're like, there's a weird psychological thing happening here. Yeah. That we can unpack when we're not having fun with Legos. But there's a question right off the bat that I didn't even think to ask, but I guess I assume that all the cast members will play the game. That's not necessarily true. Do you play all the games that you're in?
All the games that I'm in? No. It's funny, when I first started voiceover, I was like, I don't understand how. I was talking to a veteran voice actor who, I was like, you've seen this show, right? And they're like, nah. And I was like, how is that possible that you haven't seen that? Like, it's also one of the, I won't name any names, it's one of the greatest shows ever made. And I was like, how have you not watched it? And they were like, eh, I'll get around to it. And I'm like, oh, that's crazy. But I do understand with video games how it's like, I have to go through X amount of hours to get to, sometimes if it's like an NPC, you know, it's like, I don't want to play 100 hours to get to some guy that's like, hey, can you help me?
Yeah.
So I don't play everything, but this for sure, I've been waiting for this for 4 years. So, cause we recorded this a long time ago.
You've been sitting on it. That was the thing too, of course. Some delays, of course, which I'm not begrudging at all, because it's like you want it to be the best it can be, which is the mission statement. And there is some, of course, crunch involved, because in that 4 year period, one of the movies was not yet out. So there's a little bit of back and forth. But you were cast then, what, 5 years ago, you'd say?
4, I think. Well, I mean, because I did Han and Forces of Destiny, they just kind of ask, can you re-audition for this?
Right.
So I was on a short list. And then I want to say 4 years ago. I might be wrong, but because of the pandemic, everything feels like a million years ago to me.
Yeah.
But, it was a long time to sit on this. And especially since we didn't hear anything about it. I mean, someone leaked it early where they were like, oh, we're doing a Lego Star Wars game. And me and my friend Shelby, who's Princess Leia, we were like, oh, someone mentioned it, you know, and then there was no gameplay, there was no footage.
Right.
So it was kind of, a very slow process for us, and just to keep it secret. And I didn't find out who voiced Luke until 3 days ago. So
wow.
We were like, who did that? This guy's amazing. So
he is. He's really good. And that's part of the fun part for the fans. And that's something that we'll get into, is that Star Wars, more so than anything, by the nature of what it is, by the nature of playing in the different mediums, of having an overall connective canon, which other things do. But for example, there is no Lord of the Rings animated thing. Who's voicing Aragorn this time? Like, right. They had their games and that was it. But Star Wars has built legitimacy and like really a lot of weight behind the sort of stewardship of the part. Right. Like when Matt Lanter and James Arnold Taylor became Anakin and Obi-Wan, they became Anakin and Obi-Wan for life. And it was
crazy. Yeah.
It was a real, like, to some fans, that's them. Yeah. That's what they hear. And Star Wars has always put a lot of importance on the behind the scenes. So for us playing, I know for a lot of my friends, that's part of the excitement.
I mean, I can't imagine it's kind of unprecedented. I mean, the only other thing I can think of is maybe like Mickey Mouse for years. I know Disney's very, very good about like, hey, you're the voice of Donald Duck or Peter Pan or whatever it is.
And right.
For the most part, stick to that. They're very, very faithful in that way. And I mean, I know for James and all those guys, or D. Bradley Baker, you know, it's crazy that we all have such reverence for their performances and what they've done. I don't want to see, you know, someone else play Obi-Wan. Like, I love James as Obi-Wan. Like, I do what I think is a decent Obi-Wan impression. And if even someone came to me and said, hey, we're going to hire you for this, I'd be like, no, that's James. James is Obi-Wan. I would never, like, he is that character. And I love that there's a respect there. And, you know, even with especially with the clones for Dee and all that stuff, like, it's crazy. And I think that's so wonderful. Because it's so incredibly rare. But you know, who knows? I mean, there's been a rotating roster of Han and Leia's and Luke's. So because there hasn't really been a Clone Wars series or a Rebels or anything like that. So
and that's what I was going to ask you is in terms of your position or Shelby. I was going to ask about Shelby because first of all, just phenomenal Leia.
She's awesome. Yeah.
Just like just so legitimately great from Forces of Destiny. You're both in an episode written by the great Jen Murrow and directed by Brad Rao, who's, of course, on Bad Batch. And Shelby's in Bad Batch playing an evil character, an Imperial.
Right, yeah.
And the dynamic that you guys have built, you get to take on these roles, but you're right that you haven't had, by sheer virtue of what it is, the original characters, like you said, didn't get the series. So it's now that we're starting to build them out and explore them a little bit more, both canon and non-canon, as much as I love some of the Lego jokes, you know, the Lego is its own thing. But Forces of Destiny is canon. So like there's a certain element of you can say there have been 5-6 guys that have played Han in various capacities and you're one of them. And one of them is Harrison Ford.
That's crazy. Yeah. It's insane. When they told me about Forces of Destiny, I was like, it's canon? That's insane. Shelby hates this story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. I was really sick when we did Forces of Destiny and I told my agents, I was like, listen, I don't think I could do this today. Like I've lost my voice. And they were like, go in anyway. And I was like, okay, but tell them because I want to make sure that they know, like I'm sick, you know, this is going to sound weird. Mm-hmm. And so when I went in, there it was the first time I'd ever met Shelby and I was like, you know, I'm a little self-conscious because my voice was like, I'm self-conscious because like I could barely talk. And she was like, oh, I'm sick too. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So that made me feel better. So then we go into the booth and I'm like, I'm sorry, I lost my voice. Like it's really hoarse. And I was like, but it's all right. Cause Shelby's sick too. And she goes, no, I'm not. And I was like, yeah, you are. You said you were sick. And she was like, I didn't say I was sick. I was like, you told me, you said you were sick. And like, we got into this fight in front of Dave Filoni and he just starts clapping and he goes, yay. He goes, this is Han and Leia.
Oh, that's so true.
I was like, oh, that's amazing. I was like, well, and so now she always goes, you threw me under the bus. And I was like, yeah, but look what it did. You know, like I get so mad at her. So Forces of Destiny was wonderful. I was so excited to do that. But I do wish I could redo it because other people can't hear it because they don't know what I sound like every day. But
sure.
I sound sick to me, but I'm glad that happened because of that really funny moment with Dave where I was just like, this is great. The fact that he got excited and, you know, it was all worth it. Yeah.
I mean, that's the, would it help if I get out and pushed? Like that's that energy coming through in a eventually married couple.
It's funny. I mean, we fight like a bickering marriage. I mean, we're really, really close friends, but it's funny how we have a very combative relationship in the sense that we're always arguing over stupid things. We're like, I was there for her birthday when she was taking a party bus. She's like, I'm taking a party bus to the Renaissance Fair. Are you coming? I was like, are you insane? Like, I'm not taking a party bus at 8 in the morning and drinking White Claws. Like, I'll meet you at 2 in the afternoon. You know, like, but anyway, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's great. That's excellent. So, with all that said, I mean, we've already had a hilarious story and some great insights into the relationship that happened, but let's peel it back a little bit. Of course, you probably get asked
Yeah, you're a voice actor. Can you say this as Han? Can you say this as Gandalf? Like, trying not to do that stuff. Because I'm sure that that's, like, you know, your family and, like, anyone that meets you in your life.
It's fine.
I'm sure that comes up.
I'm used to it. It's weird with Han because I can never quite always conjure a line. I mean, I know so many of his lines, but it's, like, it's a whole thing. Like, when you're doing Han, it's a whole persona. It's not like Marty where you throw out one line. You know, who's scruffy looking? Like, that's like, oh, okay. You know, but Han is a whole, he's got this laconic sort of lazy attitude that... For me, it takes a while to really get a sense of what that feels and sounds like. There aren't too many, I don't know how to describe it. There aren't too many, like, you do one line and people go, hooray!
Yeah, it's almost, so much of his stuff is about the interplay. When you go to, like, the Greedo scene, it's like, I bet you have. It's like, well, that's a response. Like, sorry about the mess. Like, that's also kind of a response. Like,
that's a good way to put it is, yeah, they are responses to things. And for the most part, they're arguments. Like, one of my favorite scenes ever is when they're in on Hoth and they're arguing back and forth. And, you know, like, that is, I'm not just going to go scream that at people.
Sure. Yeah. So with that, and then the other question is, like, so how, what made you decide to want to be an actor? And we can unpack that for so long. And immediately I could tell, just when we just met in this recording, this is one of those, like, hi, how are you, boom, start recording situations. I could tell, you know, how passionate you are, just like about the arts, about the characters, how much that comes through. I'm sure that you have like a theatrical background, or like you're a performing kid, or like a kid that liked to make people laugh, any of those like classic things.
Kind of, yeah. I was like how do I describe this? Like a shy class clown, I guess would be, you know, like as I got older, I found that people liked, like, oh, AJ does an impression of Michael J. Fox or whatever it was. And so I'd sort of like shyly perform things, but it was mostly just around friends. But I did do theater, but I really, really disliked theater people growing up. Like I had a really hard time competing with that energy because it was always very dishonest, you know, like people have a tendency to sort of overplay things, and I just kind of wanted to do everything and just be true to how I was feeling in the moment, as opposed to sucking up or overreacting, you know. So I was very turned off by theater. So I actually went to school for film, and then when I was there, we were too lazy to get actors, so people kept asking, like, hey, can you act in this thing? So I just kept acting in friends' terrible movies where we were freezing our asses off at, you know, midnight on a rooftop in the snow. And so that was sort of my real introduction to acting. And then, I guess as far as my path, I did Marty McFly. That was my first, like, real acting gig, as I heard they were doing the Back to the Future game. I made a phone call and left a message as Marty, and they went, can you audition? And I was like, sure. So I didn't hear anything back, and had a friend who needed a roommate. And when I moved out to LA, they were like, hey, you got the role. I was like, what?
Wow.
I had to re-audition, but it was essentially within a couple days or a week or so of getting to LA, they were like, can you play Marty in this game with Christopher Lloyd? And I was like, yeah, you guys realize I'm not an actor. So, I was lucky that I had acted mostly my whole life sort of as a hobby, you know. My parents always told me, don't become an actor. So you'll be starving, you'll be a loser, like all that sort of stuff. So something I was very, it took me years just to admit to people. I was like, well, I guess I'm an actor, you know?
And what's unique about that situation, it cannot be overstated how unique it is. I feel like every time it happens, it gets fans going crazy, even though we're in an era where it happens more and more, because the lines between, like, you're just voice, you're just TV, you're just film, like, those have all sort of broken in the world of streaming. So you will get people returning, like, you know, should be noted, Mark Hamill was in Forces of Destiny. Like, he came back for Luke. Like, there's a lot of bleeding in and out. But that Back to the Future game was about a decade ago.
Yeah. It's crazy to think of. Yeah.
And a decade ago, you're getting this part and you're going in, and it's not some other guy as Doc Brown. It's Doc Brown.
And
you have no experience at that point in that world. Like, what is that high pressure scenario like to be in a thing with Christopher Lloyd, to be in a thing with Mark Hamill, to step in with the original players who were there?
I mean, there's no secret. I was sick to my stomach. I didn't eat. I was, you know, especially with Marty, like, I got super, super thin because I was so nervous about it that I, like, couldn't palate food because it was that much of a, like, oh, my God, I'm obsessed with Back to the Future. I mean, same thing with Han, where there's certain things that I'm just absolutely obsessed with. And I was terrified. I mean, it got better as I started recording and became friends with the crew, and everyone was super, super nice. But it was... yeah, it's so much to live up to.
Right.
And especially with voice matching in particular, you're pretending to be someone else. You know, like I'm going in and going, hi, I'm not Michael J. Fox, but I want to sort of trick you into believing that he's been here the whole time. And so it's a lot of pressure because you're not just acting, you're acting as someone else. So there's a whole other layer of sort of music you have to play with your voice, which is a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And same thing with Han, where it's like Harrison Ford and Michael J. Fox are two of my hugest, biggest heroes. You know, Indiana Jones means more to me than anything. And, you know, like I'm so obsessed with Han and Indy and Marty. There's so much pressure I put on myself to get as close as possible. And it's indescribably surreal to get to do it, especially with, so like, for example, for this project, for Lego, they didn't tell me what I was doing. They said it was Han, but they wouldn't tell me if it was older Han or younger Han, or if it was like solo Han. And I was like, I don't, you know, is it Harrison Ford? And they were like, yes. I was like, all right. So when I got in there, they put the script down and it was all the lines from the original movies. And I was like, I don't what are we doing here?
Right.
You know, and they were like, oh, you're going to recreate all the dialogue from the movies. And so that's kind of how it started, is we did. I mean, we literally, every line that Han says, basically, we did. They're not all in the game, but I recorded all of them in addition to a bunch of other stuff. But I, yeah, that was a lot of pressure just to be like, all right.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The trash compactor scene, I'm like, okay.
I can imagine. And like, and the difference is too, like, it's one thing, of course, like, you know, what I had originally asked, you're with the original players sometimes, but then also, are you telling an original Han story? Or but when you get those lines of like, oh no, these are the lines. Like it's one thing in Forces of Destiny where this is an unseen snippet of their adventure.
Right. Yeah.
Post Return of the Jedi, where yes, you're doing Harrison's Han, but these are not things that people have been saying for 40 years. Whereas in this case, it's like they are. So, you know, you mentioned your love of these actors, of these characters. What role did Star Wars play in you coming up and you going into that film program, into making stuff with your friends? How much did that influence you as a kid? What is the influence of Harrison like on you as an actor? Because like you said, it takes a lot to embody and to slip into that. But do you bring things from his screen performances into what you're doing in the voice world? Are you rewatching those movies as preparing?
I mean, I've seen Raiders and Empire more than I've seen any movies in existence. Like, wow. Well, your first question was, how did Star Wars affect me? I mean, it's to say it's everything is an understatement. Like I remember seeing it as a kid, like very, very early, and not quite understanding what it was, but wanting to know more. Like I really wanted a lightsaber, and I remember having this really cheesy black plastic lightsaber that had like a disc at the top with like a white thing. I've looked on eBay for them just to see if they're around, but I think I got it from Star Tours in Disney World, but it would like pop off. It looked like a big white popsicle stick, and I would use that. And then I remember my babysitter coming over and me saying how much I wanted to, I was probably like four, how much I wanted to watch Star Wars. And so she brought the VHSs over and we watched them, and it just completely blew my mind. I was also terrified of Yoda, which was a really funny thing. Like I remember going down to my basement as a kid and being worried that Yoda was going to show up, because there was something about him that just really spooked me. But I used to listen to my dad's record player. He had the Miko Disco Star Wars album. That's you know, where like the two space people in the front. That's not really Star Warsy. But I would listen to that and sit in a cardboard box and pretend I was piloting like the Millennium Falcon or an X-wing or, you know, like it was a deep obsession. I remember getting in trouble because my parents had a spare curtain rod that or shower curtain rod that I cut up because I was trying to turn. I was like, that looks like a lightsaber. And I was like sawing at it, like 10 years old, trying to make, and then taking windshield wiper rubber and cutting that up to make the blade, you know, the grips.
Oh,
like, yeah. Like
yeah,
yeah. New Hope. Yeah. It was a very deep, deep, deep obsession. I wrote a letter to George Lucas when I was really young and didn't get an autograph back, but got like a really nice letter from his like secretary that was like, hey, you know, we appreciate the drawing because I drew a picture of C-3PO and R2. But here's an issue of Star Wars Insider, which I hadn't known that existed at the time because it was the 90s. I didn't know. You know, if you don't know about something, you don't know about it. You know, there's no internet. And that opened up a whole level of crazy for me where I was like, I can just buy a lightsaber. Like, mom, dad, spot me a couple $100s, you know, which didn't happen.
Still waiting. Yeah. Still waiting. Yeah.
It's a very deep, deep obsession. And all Lucasfilm stuff. I mean, talking about Han, I mean, Indiana Jones is a huge, huge influence on just who I am as a human being. You know, your idea of what a hero is, what a man is, you know, for lack of a better term, but like what it means to rise to the occasion. Like Indy for me as a kid, like I loved Han, but Han was kind of a jerk, you know, like, so it wasn't until I was older that I appreciated his sort of his vulnerability and how cool he was. But like as a kid, I much more related to Luke because Luke was sweet and he was earnest, whereas Han was like, you know, was always dismissing him. But Indy to me was very accessible, and he just kept going. So, I mean, I have so many Indy props. I've got more Raiders replica jackets than I probably should have. Like,
it's fantastic.
From Wested and from Indy Magnoli and all those makers. And yeah, I've got the fertility idol, and it's a problem. So, yeah, when I'm doing Han, I'm thinking about, I mean, I do this weird thing, whether I'm doing Michael J. Fox or Tom Holland or whoever I'm voice matching, where I kind of imagine their face. And I know for Harrison, he has this, there's a droop to his face, and you can kind of see it as he gets older, as one side of his mouth goes down a little more than another. So
there's certain words he says where everything's kind of, I know it's hard for you to see on the thing that he's got.
there's a laziness to his lip that's hard to place. But yeah, if you were to like rapidly age him, turn a dial and watch him age, you could see one side of his mouth start to slip down, and that affects the way he talks. He has
Yeah.
Like in Raiders, he goes, whiskey? Like he has like this, I'm exaggerating, but instead of saying whiskey, he goes, whiskey? It's like this thing that he does. And there's so many of his strange little, he makes all these like weird noises when he's doing stuff. And you hear a lot of that when he's doing Han because he's so much more animated, but he very much so does it when he's Indy. Like, it's a date. You eat him. Like, things you would never, like, he hits notes in that movie that you don't even think about.
He's like the epitome of like, or one of the epitomes, there are many, of he made choices. Like, there's stuff going on.
Yeah, all the time. And it's such a weird, it's such an interesting thing as someone who grew up with like Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine, or like Emperor's Tomb or Fate of Atlantis. All the guys that played Indy were like, we've got to get to the thing. Like, they're all very, very, and I love, what is his name? Doug Lee, who does the original. Like, there's voices, like the guy who did him in Infernal Machine. Like, I love that. That's still Indy to me, but they make him very, very dry. And it's like, nah, Harrison Ford does, he goes everywhere. And I think that's why he's so appealing, is he plays around, you know, like Bruce Willis or any of those guys. Where it's
right.
Like, yeah, they're messing around and it's fun.
Like, it gets said a lot. Oh, no, that you
I
totally.
Just, I don't even know if I was answering your question. I just went off on a.
You're like, I'm just feeling it. I'm just letting the Harrison love.
Yeah.
No, but it's true. I mean, what you touched on there, it gets said a lot. I know Nathan Fillion has said how Harrison's physicality influenced him, especially when he was doing like Firefly. Like, Harrison was the original hero that got his ass kicked, and he so took a beating, and he took a beating in a way that made Han and Indy and Deckard all super fallible. And it's in his voice performances too. Like, I always, when I think of Harrison as Indy, I always think about him repeating the penitent man kneels before God, and like him trying to figure that out. Like, there's an anxiousness there that you don't think someone that cool would have, and that places you in the mind of, oh yeah, he is a professor. Right. And with Han, it's, oh yeah, he is kind of just making this up as he goes along, which he gets misremembered, I think, almost Han, the characters. Oh, when you hear people talk about him now, it's, oh, Han was this badass in 1980. And it's like, he does badass things, but he's a lover. He always chooses friendship, and he's really goofy.
Yeah, he's super goofy. And that's what I, as I've gotten older, I found that more, I mean, with Indy, it's much more evident, I think. As a kid, I was always drawn to his, like in Temple of Doom, when he gets punched in the chest, and he does that, like that, I don't want to do it now because I'll destroy my microphone, but like, he does that gasp where it's like, he's so pathetic in that moment, and it makes you love him. So, because, you know, he's probably about to die. He makes so many of those choices. Like when he's in, when he drinks the blood of Kali and he's on the, you know, going, you know, like on the bed. It's so weird and it's so vulnerable. And he has so many iconic ways of, you know, performing strange moments. He's so much better and so much more diverse than any of us remember him being in a weird way. You kind of, what was it? Like, I love the book Peter Pan, which is a weird example, but it'll make sense in a second. And we all kind of picture the story of Peter Pan being a very specific way. But when you read the book, you're like, God, this is deeply upsetting and strange. And doesn't, you know, it's so much more complex than our memory of Peter Pan.
Right.
Because you think of the Disney version or whatever it is. And I think in a lot of ways, Han and India still to an icon. And so we sort of start to soften the edges of what makes them relatable or vulnerable. Or even Darth Vader. I mean, like, you look at how absolutely terrifying and brilliant his suit is. I went to Disneyland right before the pandemic with two of my friends, and they're big, pretty macho dudes. And as soon as Darth Vader came around the corner, we just melted. And my one buddy turned to me, and he's from Jersey. He's a pretty tough guy. He goes, hey, did you kind of have like a mini panic attack when Darth Vader showed up? And I was like, yeah, he's terrifying. And like, yeah. But now we're used to seeing him as this icon. You lose a little bit of the resonance of how scary he is, or how, I guess for Han, like, or Harrison, how much humor he infuses into his characters and vulnerability. And that's what makes him endure.
I mean, yeah. The legends become bigger than what was actually there. And what I think he brilliantly taps into in Force Awakens, and we should say for people that haven't played the game yet, you are also older Han, and you're bringing something else to that performance in the same way that he did by nature of his age. But also, he's making even more choices in Force Awakens. And I think that the brilliance of that movie is taking your young heroes and having them say, the smuggler? No, the rebellion general. And he's there. And he's like, I'm a guy. Like, Han is like, I'm literally just looking for my car. Right, I still have my same dog. Like, it's that exact energy of an older man. And what was your reaction in 2015, seeing how effortlessly he slipped back into that part?
I mean, he was basically doing himself at this point. Like, I felt like Han was dealing with what he dealt with, where, like, he's been famous for so long. You know, like, he's used to sort of, like, you know, fielding questions about, oh, what was it like to work with Spielberg? And what was it like? Like, you can see that he's got this sort of, like, blasé way of existing. And he clearly brought a lot of that experience to Han, where he's just like, yeah, whatever, I'm over it. You know, and it's funny for speaking of, I did have to re-audition for Han. Like, I did young Han, and they were like, we don't know who we're going to cast for old Han. And I was like, can I try?
Right.
So they did have me go through a process of re-auditioning where I had to, like, chew up my voice, because it's not, his voice is very grubby. And that was, like, when I first saw the movie, that's what I kept thinking. My voice just cracked. That's what I was thinking, is, man, his voice is deep now. You know, he's got so much in age.
When he yells Ben at Adam Driver, I was like, did Adam Driver, like, piss himself on set when Harrison yelled at him? Because that's an intense yell. It took the theater aback. And he just brought it so hard. And then they all did in those returns. Before we get more into the psychology of this and breaking down how you did it, I do have to ask, because as you were talking about Harrison sounds, how much of the sounds and the reactions and the ha-has, how much of that are you laying down when you're doing these games? Like, do they ask you, like, okay, can you lay down like 20 different versions of Han falling or getting hit or getting smashed? Like, all of those Harrisonisms that he does?
Yeah, I mean, they asked me to do, it was at the end of like probably our second session, but like, all right, you're jumping, all right, you're getting hit. And it's like, ha, ha, you know, and I kept thinking of, I remember referencing Temple of Doom, where he's you know, you don't hear him make those noises really, or other than like, you know, like him getting hit or whatever. He doesn't make a lot of those kinds of silly noises. And they were like, well, it's Lego too, so have fun. Yeah. There was a sense of like, and that's one thing about Lego that's really kind of great, is yes, we're doing Star Wars, or yes, we're replicating things, but also it's for kids. Like, I do remember them saying for one of the Lego projects, I don't remember which one it is, don't go as gruff as him in Force Awakens. Like, keep it lighter, because we don't want kids to be like, what is he saying? You know?
Right.
So there is some play, which is fun. You know, I mean, the perfectionist in me always wants to make it exactly right. But then I'm realizing, you know, Han's doing a double jump and flip, which is something he'd never do. So, but yeah. We ran through, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of, like, he gets hit, he explodes, he's reaching, he's doing all these things. And that's pretty standard for a game, you know, where you know you're going to be facing through all these different things. And it's funny because they used, obviously, those libraries for scenes where I didn't know I was in that scene, you know, and suddenly Han will make a little effort, or, you know, where Luke comes in with the training ball, the training remote, and Han reacts. And I was like, oh, they clearly just pulled from the library, which is really funny because I didn't, you know, they didn't tell me specifically to do that.
Yeah.
But that's what's great about Lego, you know, is they're just there to have fun and yet also lend as much authenticity to the characters that is, you know, feasible.
Absolutely. And on occasion, for a lot of the, especially the leads, it does occasionally throw in, like, Kat Tabor, of course, our Padme since 2008, gets, like, some really dark jokes in Attack of the Clones, like, much darker than I expected them to put in a LEGO game. Like, she says to Anakin in the droid factory, could I get help a little faster if I was kidnapped by Tusken Raiders? Like, and I was like, oh, wow, Padme. Wow. Like, brutal.
Haven't gotten to that one. I started with the originals and then made my way through the sequels, and now I'm going back to the prequels.
Okay, cool.
Because I was saving them for a friend because he's obsessed with the prequels, and I was like, all right, we'll play those together.
Yeah, so you get stuff like that where they let people play. And with that, and, you know, the mention of Kat Tabor, we've talked about other voices, you and Shelby now in two of the most iconic roles ever in cinema, in fandom, you know, taking these parts on. And then, of course, there's Luke, and, you know, Lucasfilm has had several Vaders throughout the years when James Earl Jones hasn't returned. He's returned sometimes, like for Rogue One. Jury's out on if he'll be in Obi-Wan Kenobi at the time of this recording. They could announce it tomorrow, right. And this will be dated. But in terms of the psychology of heading into one of these parts that is so finite, that is so complete. I mentioned it on Twitter, and this was the genesis of your appearance here, was me tweeting, how much I loved you in the game, because Han's my favorite character, and you were wonderful. And it literally came from, I was playing specifically Empire, and I was like, this guy's just crushing it. And then my first thought was like, is this someone who's done it before? Which, yes, you had. And then I looked in and I was like, oh, from the Back to the Future of the game. So I you're familiar with you without even realizing I was. And one of my first thoughts was, it's one of those performances that is the character without feeling like you're just doing an incredible Harrison Ford. And I think that that's what Lucasfilm has been really good at with the people that they've chosen. And that's the bedrock of Clone Wars, is that they're not doing Ewan, Samuel Jackson, and Hayden and Natalie Portman. Like, it doesn't feel that way. Right. When people appear in Rebels, it doesn't feel that way. Right. And I think that these games and Forces of Destiny have sort of unlocked that too. And so what is it like in your world? Are there different philosophies on this with different voice actors, where some people are like, you should get as close as you can, and other people are like, you should have some freedom?
It depends on, I mean, typically what'll happen is you, in most of my experiences, you audition and audition and audition to sound as close as humanly possible. Like, it has to be like, knock it out of the park every time. And then typically when you get in there, they go, make it your own. That happens almost always across the board, because you know, if you're not having fun with it and it's not living and breathing, it's just going to sound stiff. And, you know, I'm lucky, whereas like Marty and Han are voices that I've played in that world a lot. So I kind of know what it's like to be playful, especially with Lego, where they're like, we're going to do goofy stuff. And so you have to be comfortable with that, because there's things that you would never in a million years hear Han Solo say, or Marty McFly. And so I have to kind of let go of those reins and realize I'm not going to sound perfect, or it's not going to be an exact voice match all the time. And which for me is hard, because I just want to be invisible in that sense, where I want people to think that's Harrison Ford. But I realize now that that's, you know, he's so much older, you know, even if it was him doing it, he's not going to sound like Han from Empire, you know. But it's very strange. I mean, I even, like, when I first booted up the game, I immediately was like cringing, waiting to hear my performance. And I could tell that I hadn't warmed up enough doing the Greedo scene, you know. Like, I was like, oh, I should have warmed up more, because I also didn't know what I was doing when I was going in. So we recorded in chronological order. So to me, I'm like, okay, I can hear myself getting gruffer and sounding closer to Harrison as it goes on. But I hear myself in that first one where I'm saying, you know, Han Solo, like, I just don't, I'm like, oh, it's not at 100, you know? Yeah. So I very much so still have that perfectionist gene, where I want it to be as spot on as possible. But in this case, it's Lego Han. You know, if we were trying to fool people into thinking that they were watching the original movies one for one, I'm sure we would have taken another pass at. But he's kind of his own entity. So there's room there to play. And I think that's what's great about what, you know, James and Dee and all those guys and Kat, like, they've all brought so much to those characters that, you know, like, it would be weird if someone was doing a Hayden Christensen impression. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because, like, James sounds so much like Ewan McGregor.
He does.
But yet I still hear, it's a different Obi-Wan, and in a way that I think is really refreshing and nice. It's I don't picture Ewan McGregor, I picture his Obi-Wan, which I think is the ultimate thing, and I think why they've endured so long is people no longer associate these characters to just being one person. They are also, you know, being represented by other actors in a way that feels very complete and feels very honest, and that's rare. It's super, super rare. I mean, it's like Bill Farmer, who does Goofy. Like, to me, he is Goofy. You know, it's gonna be so hard to find someone to even come to his level, you know, even close to his level.
It's absolutely true. And like, to our point, like we've talked about so far in this conversation, Star Wars being that unique place, it's one of the only times where the fandom celebrates almost that difference. Like when you get, like you talked about, they told you, we don't know who old Han is going to be yet. It ends up being you because you re-auditioned for it. But that's not always the case, because this game also has Steven Stan as Ben Kenobi. And so you had both Steven and James Arnold Taylor doing the different ages, but the fans celebrate both. And with, you know, Witwer taking on Palpatine, people are excited for his funnier, sinister animated Palpatine in the same way that they're excited for Ian McDiarmid. And it becomes this family of passing the character around and sort of shepherding that. And to hear like James Arnold Taylor's story about how he started in his Obi-Wan-ness, his run as Obi-Wan was doing little fill-ins and help with Ewan on the prequels back in the day, and how he was able to get his foot in the door by doing that exact thing. And he has sort of now earned the right to make it his own. So it's really interesting to explore that. And to your point about your gaming experience playing it, you know, you're being really critical of yourself and the New Hope stuff. It's interesting that you say that, as well as having recorded in chronological, because one of my favorite parts of the game is a whole sequence with you that is not in Empire, and it's Han and General Ryken running around doing, you know, this, we need to get all the satellites in order so we can track Luke, which is a unique thing created for the game. And that really lets both actors sort of find themselves and sort of find a new sort of buddy cop type thing that's happening in the moment.
Yeah.
And that stuff is really interesting, where they throw scenes at you.
I love that stuff, because there isn't, suddenly there isn't the pressure to, I mean, for me, like the trash compactor scene, like I don't think I've ever been more giddy recording something, because I know that so well, you know?
Yeah.
So for me to hit all those notes, you know, it's like hearing a song and then playing it, like that was like, oh my God, this is like jazz or something. Like, I love this. But when it comes to like doing a new scene like that, where it's like, what is happening? I'm climbing a tower and, you know, so much fun, because then you get to explore jokes and things that you're totally free to exist within the character and be the character, but just you're doing something totally new, you know, which hopefully maybe one day, if we're lucky, maybe there'll be something that's like that, where it's like new adventures with Han, Leia, and Luke, like, because, you know, it's a piece of the, other than Shadows of the Empire, it doesn't, it's not too much like that, you know? And there's so much room for those characters to breathe and live that, well, my voice keeps cracking today. I don't know what's going on. but
old Han wants to come out. That's what
exactly. I don't know what's going on. Guess it's just, it's also, it's dry, it's windy, so that affects my allergies. But anyway, what was I saying? Ryken? I don't know. I loved that. I remember when we were recording that being like, what am I doing? You know, like being very confused by, I was like, that's not in the movies.
Yeah.
And trying to sort of sort out what I was doing, because I really didn't understand at the time how they were using our dialogue and what it was for. So it was very interesting.
Yeah. And to your point about us not having new stuff with them, it's cool to see that slowly start to, like, there's a Han Lando novel called Last Shot that I love by J.J. Jose Older. There's a Luke Lando coming out, Luke Lando novel coming out called Shadow of the Sith. And it's like, okay, maybe like, well, you know, the audiobooks for that, who knows what will happen. Sometimes they've done that. Yeah. Like Cat Tabor did the Padme audio. Audiobooks. Ashley Eckstein did the Ahsoka one. Like, it would be really cool to unlock that world. Now, in terms of the future, I'm not going to ask you things that you can't answer, because that's a waste. It's a waste of time for everybody.
Right.
But I had come into this thinking, I'm going to ask him a fun question. I'm going to ask AJ, like, would you rather voice Indy or Deckard if you were going to do another Harrison character? Now I know the answer. Like, yeah, after this conversation, I was like, a useless question at this point. No disrespect to Blade Runner, of course.
No, but I absolutely love Blade Runner, but he's also giving a very different performance as Deckard. I mean, I know it's, again, you think about Harrison Ford, there's sort of a generic impression people have.
Yeah.
But like, the way he talks that is so just like, we went down to here. Like, there's this this monotone. I'm not going to. It's funny. When I do a Harrison that's not for a session, I do almost a parody of it because I don't want to give. It's a really weird thing.
You're doing somebody doing Harrison.
I'm doing an impression of someone doing an impression of Harrison Ford. Yeah, because yeah. I'm almost mocking myself in a way. It's very bizarre. I was talking to a friend of mine who does like a really good impression of like. He also does voice matching, and it's like, yeah, I'm never doing an impression the voice match when I'm talking casually. But anyway, Blade Runner, he's so dry and so, you know, whereas Indy, it's there's so much more to it.
Yeah.
You know, you can get the sense that he was upset at Ridley Scott, you know, when you're watching Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But hey, I would gladly do it all.
Of course.
Thrilled because, you know, anything Harrison related, I'd be honored to do. You know, even I've said to the casting director that like, hey, even if you go, you know what, screw you, you're never doing Han or Indy or anything ever again. No Harrison stuff for you. I'd be like, thank you for what we have done. You know, I'm so thankful.
An incredible, incredible achievement. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and there's tons of dudes out there who have done it in the past, and, you know, so I'm very lucky to have done it at all, so.
It's a fraternity of Hans. And now in terms of, like, on the broader sense, when you're watching something now, it's particularly the IP stuff, I guess, where there's a chance that, you know, down the road there might need to be the game version or the animated version. Do you watch things instinctively as a performer or as a fan and start to develop a take for fun? Do you ever find yourself coming home from a movie in your kitchen and you're like, did you watch Morbius and think, wow, I want to be this, I want to develop a take on this vampire?
No, not at all. I didn't see Morbius, as it sounds like most people didn't, but
yeah.
Well, I do find myself wondering with like, so I did all the Lego movie stuff for Chris Pratt. Like, I also did all the Jurassic World Lego stuff and just some Jurassic World games, like Jurassic Park Evolution. And so there's an interesting thing where I'm like, am I going to do Mario? You know, like, I don't know what's coming down the pipeline, it would be very funny because we're all sort of anxiously waiting to hear him, whatever the hell that's going to be. you know, that's a whole other thing. But, you know, same thing with, I do a ton of Tom Holland's stuff, so I kind of get like, okay, is there going to be a Spider-Man video game? Are we going to, you know? So there's that. I do feel a little on my toes when it comes to that kind of stuff. But I very, very rarely see a new movie with a new actor and think, oh, I can match them. I will get sent an audition typically, and they'll be like, can you do this? And I'll be like, I don't know, and then I'll try it. Like with Chris Pratt, I didn't think that would become a thing, and now I've been voicing that character for like 10 years where I'd be doing actually, I'm not 100% sure how long it's been, but it's been a while. It just kind of came out of nowhere. It was an audition for like an Easter commercial or something. And they were like, can you match this? I was like, yeah, sure. And then it just kind of ramped up where they were like, oh, we hear you do Chris Pratt. Can you also do this? And I was like, okay.
Right.
And then it just kind of kept snowballing. And then when Lego Movie 2 came out, there was a ton of stuff. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. This is very interesting.
Yeah. And like the way that it branches out into unexpected, like you said, like keeping people in the back of these directors, these casting directors will keep people in the back of their minds, I guess, because it's just, it behooves them, I guess, to do that. To have, you know, I've done X versions of this, XYZ. And in terms of that, of these different versions now, of course, they kept you from Forces of Destiny and had you re-audition for Lego and they moved you over. Outside of the comedy, are you coming in with a certain amount of specificity of knowing I'm going to approach this differently because it is this smaller toy minifig of Han versus trying to do the one where you're like, I know Mark Hamill's in the show. I know that Daisy Ridley was in the show as Rey. Like, this needs to be the version. Are there differences that you can describe, or are you just feeling it?
I mean, for this, for specifically, well, so for the Lego specials, I know they kind of like it broad, or they kind of like it a little more. There's things where I'm trying to just do Han, and they're like, no, have fun. And I'm like, okay, so that there is definitely a different mentality there, especially with older Han. With the game, I didn't know what I was doing when I went in. Like, they kind of described it to me on the fly, so I was like, oh, okay, you guys are remaking the Lego games that I used to play, and so I just went in and did it as straight as possible, you know. I was just like, this is Han. And then there'd be moments where they go, okay, we're going to play with this or we'll have fun. Like, you know, there's certain lines like, is that same jacket? And he's like, new jacket. Like, they wanted me to do that with a different inflection than he does it in the movie. Like, I remember that because I kept doing it the way he says it in the movie. And they were like, no, let's do it this way instead. And I was like, okay. I was very disappointed Chewie Were Home wasn't in there because I remember prepping that. I was like,
had the same reaction playing it. I was like, yeah. And then you're like, maybe it was just too iconic to touch.
Yeah, because like, he didn't go on. I remember like that was one of my go-to lines as I kept repeating that in the car on the way there. And I got my voice to a place where I was like, oh, I could say it. And it feels very natural and smooth. Because, yeah, there's definitely a lot of, speaking of James, he was the one that actually, once I got the role, I was like, what's a healthy way for me to prep for this without just screaming every night? You know, because that's usually like to get to that pitch and to get to that gruffness. I mean, rumors are, you know, Harrison smokes a lot, you know, to some degree. And that creates a sound. You know, you create a sort of sound in your throat and your muscles. And there's a very specific, and if you're on set all day and you're tired, that creates a sound. And so the way to achieve that is through different exercises and through, you know, to some degree, yelling in your car. And so James was able to sort of coach me into a healthy way of doing that. So by the time I went to the session, I was, you know, I could do it without killing my voice.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, that was my go-to, was just doing the, let's see if I could do another, Chewie, we're home. Like that. that deep, like leathery, you know, which he doesn't sound anything like that in the originals.
No.
But I was so disappointed when I saw, like, no, they got rid of it. And at the time, my voice was even, like I said, I've got allergies now, but my voice was like so deep and so ready to do it because I knew what I was doing. I had like a week or two off from the first sessions. And I was like, let's do Old Han. I'm ready. Let's get in there. And we did record it. It just didn't make it in. But so there's a bank of every line that he's ever done somewhere as voiced by me, which is pretty fun.
I mean, just knowing that exists has to be a huge geek out thing, right?
It's like, pretty crazy. Matt Wood, too, was also the director for it. So he was the one in there that was, and I was like, oh my God, you're General Grievous and Roger. Yeah.
Matt Wood, yeah.
Freak out. Yeah.
Grievous and also Bib. Also Bib.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Bib now twice. Bib the Hutt at the end of Book of Boba.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Do you have people, like, of course, being Han sort of limits you to those films of people and even friends of yours in the industry that you can interact with by sheer virtue of who's cast as who? Are there Star Wars characters that you either want to take a crack at that you haven't, or partners, scene partners that you haven't been able to work with? Like, you don't get to work with James, you know,
right.
In terms of, because his Obi-Wan is of a different time and there's no crossover there. So do you have like Star Wars work fantasies?
I mean, I'd probably, I would love to, Luke, the guy who voiced Luke, David Mankin.
He did a great job.
Fantastic. Yeah. And Shelby, you know, I feel like my life with Shelby is basically on it. Like, we're always arguing about something, or, you know, like we'll go to Disneyland together and argue about, you know, where we're going next or whatever it is. So that's just real life. But I would love to do something with, James and I did, he was young Doc Brown and I was Marty. So we had that, but it's so rare. The thing that sucks is it's so rare now to have cast records, just because of COVID and all that stuff. And I've been working on a couple shows since right before COVID hit. We had like one or two cast recordings and then it was all remote from there. So there's one show that I've recorded. It's in the show, The Croods, Tree. We're with Kif Vandenhoevel. I've known him for years. He also voiced Older Han in Forces of Destiny, which is pretty funny. And now he's playing my dad in The Croods.
Worked out.
Yeah, he's very sweet. Him and I are very close. He's a sweetheart. But anyway, like, it's weird that we can't play off each other. We can't go into a booth and record right now because of, you know, everything that's going on. But yeah, I would love to do something with D. Baker. We've worked together in the past, but not as like Cody and Han, or, you know, Boba Fett, or God, there's so many.
You can get some crossover with older Rex and Han, Jedi.
On
you could
Endor,
do there.
Yeah,
there could be something there for sure. And again, who knows with what's happening? I mean, Celebration, there's going to be the Bad Batch 2 panel. And of course, again, no sense in asking you or Shelby or anybody, like, when are you going to be involved? Because no one can say anything. That's a waste. But
exactly.
And it always makes me cringe to see, like, interviews with people where they ask, like, what can you tell us about this? And it's like, you know, they can't. But
they might slip. You never know. So
maybe one day someone will crack. But it is just really endearing to know, of course, like how much you care and how much this means to you. And it comes through so strong in the work. So as we're starting to wind down here, I guess I'm just wondering, like, how has this experience changed the way that you see yourself either as an artist, as an actor? Because now, you know, we've come a long way from you being uncomfortable calling yourself one. Now, you know, now you are one. Right. How has this sort of changed your goals and everything? I mean, because this is going back to you as the kid breaking the shower rod and everything. Like, it, like now you're in it. Like, your name is in the blue font. I believe it's blue at the end of the game credits and everything. But you're there. So, like, what are you taking from this?
I mean, I guess, well, first of all, I'll never be able to believe it. There's a certain part of my brain that just can't fathom it. Like, no matter what happens, you can't, maybe there are people who can, and I kind of envy them. But I'll never quite really feel it in my soul that's like, you know, even if I was like watching the original Star Wars and I was in every scene waving, you know, at the camera, I'd still not believe that was happening. Also, that'd be horrible. But, I mean, I guess for me, like, I was always super, super shy. I mean, that's why even on the podcast, I'm a little shy about doing Han or Indy or any of that stuff because it means so much to me. I want to make sure when I'm there, it's perfect. And so even like I've seen, like someone said, like, oh, you sounded off in this. And I was like, when? What was it? You know, like I'm through a tweet. And I was like, because I want it to be as good as it can be all the time. And so I'm learning at the very least that I put this, you know, I put this out there, not that it was on my own, but it's out there and there's nothing I can do to change it. Mm-hmm. And people have had a really positive reaction. I've been so supportive, other than that one guy. But to trust myself a little more and be like, it's okay. You know, like you do a pretty good Han. You know, you don't have to make yourself sick over matching Harrison Ford and staying up all hours of the night to listen as much as you can and repeat. So it's a bit freeing to know that people have been more or just are accepting of my take on it, because that's ultimately what it comes down to. Like, I could be born with identical vocal cords, but it's still your take. Every actor brings their own version of it. So I feel very lucky that people have been so positive and to try, I guess, in my brain, not to talk about it for too long, to just chill a little bit.
Yeah. You know?
It's the most iconic thing in the universe. I mean, what's more iconic than Star Wars? And it's hard not to get in my head about that and just to learn to enjoy it as opposed to freaking out, you know?
I mean, it sounds like it's imparted a little bit of Han's energy into you as a person. Like, hey, it's me. Like, just a little bit of that like I got, or in Force Awakens with the him and Chewie of, you know, I'll do what I always do, talk my way out of it. Like,
right.
Yes, I do every time. Yeah. Like, like just those like, you will get through and you will make it. So
that's the hope. And there's a funny, not to, I'm sorry, I have to say, the funny thing is my girlfriend has never found basically anything I ever do funny, but she thinks me doing impressions of Harrison Ford is hilarious. So we have this running joke where I do like confused Harrison Ford, where I'm gonna, again, it's an impression of an impression, where it's him waking up at 3 a.m. going, Callista, put on Ally McBeal, and him just like wandering around the house. I don't know, you know, his wife is Ally McBeal.
And
I don't know why, it doesn't make any sense, but she thinks that's the funniest thing in the universe.
There's no narrative to it.
There's
just
no narrative.
Being
just,
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, wandering around at 5 a.m. going, Ally McBeal, is absurd. And so I've been given that as a gift.
Oh, it's gold.
Because I just did it as a joke one day, and she thought, and she still thinks it's the funniest thing, and I don't understand it. I don't know why she finds that so funny.
It's just Ford, it's no, something super specific, and yeah, I think that there's a beauty there. Like, it requires you to not just know that it's accurate, but also know who he's married to, what she did. Like, there's layers to this joke.
So strange.
Yeah.
Thank
so
you for that question. That was a very cool question. I had to really sort that out.
Oh, yeah. Of course, man.
This project was very, very, very special to me. And honestly, of all the things I do or have ever done, it's up there as one of the most incredible things I will ever do, because it is what it is. It's recreating Star Wars.
Yeah.
Nothing better than that.
I mean, that's the story. I mean, the common thread with guests, either like other actors or Lucasfilm folks that have been on the show or fan creators, like, there's always this, like, the story of people in Star Wars or working on Star Wars is kind of the story of Star Wars. Like, everybody is sort of finding themselves and finds confidence, and everybody sort of pulls from this thing. Last two things I wanted to ask you.
Go.
One of them is, they're both fan things. So, like, we're out of sort of the deepness now. What do you think of, and we talked about it a little bit off air, of how unenviable it is. What do you think of the younger Solo Han, in terms of the fact that they really did not get somebody doing an impression at all. And his voice is much higher and he is doing a much younger thing. And when you got this, you know, this the call for this Lego thing and you said, is it Harrison? Are you prepared to do an Alden Han if necessary? Like, what is that? What is the difference there?
Well, as far as how I feel about Solo, I mean, it's its own thing. I mean, I grew up loving Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
So to me, Harrison Ford is the core of why I enjoy Han. So
right.
I really, you know, like I can read the novels and stuff and pick it up and I'm picturing Han. But so it is hard for me as someone who's an old curmudgeon, you know, to watch someone else be Han. Like I can't create that. It's different. I mean, he's a really cute, plucky dude, you know, like he's like, wow, this guy is great on his own as who he is. But it's mentally very difficult for me to buy in, even though I think he's an awesome actor and I think he did a hell of a job. It's just, it is a very thankless job because no matter what you do, and this is my own fear that, you know, you're always going to be compared to the original in a way that, you know, it's same with James Bond and stuff. Like people are like, screw Roger Moore or whatever. Like Sean Connery's the only James Bond. And it's tough. I mean, he's stepping into the world's largest boots.
Yeah.
And
outside of Bond and Batman, I can't think of, I mean, and that's the advent of, you know, someone like Max Lloyd-Jones getting to do Luke now in Mandalorian. Like, is that you have Mark there and Mark's going to do the reference. He's going to come in, he's going to wear it to do the dots, you know, facial dots and everything for the performance capture. So some tells me they won't get Harrison to do that. But
I'd be very, very surprised. And also, you know, we move differently as we get older. Like he has a very, that's the kind of stuff I watch when I watch like Force Awakens, is his behavior, the way he emotes, the way he moves is very different. I mean, he's a different Han. He's a Han who's 30-something years older.
You don't want to get the Irishman Han Solo, where it's like, stop trying to convince me. Like, this is,
it's weird. Yeah, you would need to get someone younger to do that sort of thing if you had movements and stuff.
And that's the Indy 5 of it all, too, is that, like, we're having this whole conversation about Han and Harrison and Indy, and, like, I forget sometimes that there's one not just coming. It's in the can. Like, the movie's so wrapped.
Weird. Yeah.
So, like, it exists. And you talk about his changes, like original three Indies, Crystal Skull, there's a massive difference there. There's going to be another massive difference now.
Yeah.
Like he's aged even more. So very curious. So last thing I wanted to ask you, and again, thank you so much for the time, man. It's been great.
Yeah, of course. This is fun. I'm happy to, other than annoying my friends, I don't get to talk about Star Wars enough ever, you know,
which like
how much I love it. So
really, I think that surprises some people almost. Like I think that people assume that people involved, that that's their everyday and like that's like, and that would be cool, but it's really not the reality. Like most of the people that I've talked to that are either involved with like Lucasfilm or that have been, you know, involved in projects or that have had their voice in things, even one of my early episodes I had Naomi Aki on, who of course was like in Rise of Skywalker, and her perspective on it of course was like, it almost feels like that's a compartment of my life. Like it doesn't, right. It's spread out. Like Mark Hamill said it best once, where he said like, I love ice cream, but I don't eat it every day. And so, you know, you get to indulge and like unpack all this stuff about your Harrison love and stuff. And
right. Plus, I've been sitting on it for years. Like
that's the other thing too. Yeah.
And we thought at some point we might get canceled because they were bought by another studio. Like we didn't, like it was basically just me and Shelby going back and forth going, what is happening? You know, like, mm-hmm. Are we still in it? Cause it, you know, that happens too. Sometimes you just get randomly recast. I'm more than happy to talk about it. I'm glad we made it to the finish line and that the game is so great. I have a friend playing it now who I can never convince to play anything, and he's texting me videos of him playing. I'm like, I'm playing as R2, and I'm like, yeah, it's awesome.
It just rocks. It's just a legitimately great game. Like
it's so good.
Everything the Lego games have been, this feels like the end point of that.
Oh,
like,
totally.
It's like, okay, we pulled out every movie, every world, every side mission, every joke. Like they left it all out there. So if they'd ever made another one, I would feel satisfied. Last thing for you, man. This is a big question. Open-ended. There's tons of stuff coming up in Star Wars. What are you most excited about in the future? Is it Kenobi, Andor, more Bad Batch? Where's your head go?
I mean, I'm such a big Ewan McGregor fan. Kenobi is top of the list for me, for sure. There is always fear. I mean, you create these narratives in your head, you know, so there's always that feeling of like, God, is it going to live up to what I you know, like Mandalorian, I don't think any of us knew what to expect. And then we're all like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But with Kenobi, like, I think of that sideshow statue of him where he's right. got like the
mythos statue. Yeah.
It's one of the most, I remember seeing that with a friend of mine in a comic shop in New York. And we just like froze. We were like, oh my God, could you imagine if they made a show like that or something, you know, a movie with young Kenobi. And so now that it's coming, it's like, wow, I've had so much time to think about this. I'm really excited and yet, you know, always nervous. It's like going out on a first date. I'm like, I really hope this goes well. So that's, I'm trying to think of what else is coming out. Like, there's so much. But that for me is the top of the list, like for sure. That and going back to Disneyland because I want to go back to Galaxy's Edge. It's been too long. It's been like a year.
Yeah, it's been a long time for me too. And I got to save up an arm, a leg, and the rest of my soul to get onto the Star Cruiser too.
Oh my God, it's so expensive. Yeah,
I know.
I would love to go. If Lucasfilm was like, hey, we'll invite you out there, I'd go in an absolute heartbeat. But like, yeah, I've got two chihuahuas who love to get sick. I can't afford that right now. So yeah.
Dogs, man. I love them to death, but there's always that lingering, like, you better have a savings, like, over yeah. your head.
It's
like,
crazy. We just got a second dog who I love to death, but she got into one of our cabinets and ate one of those giant Trader Joe's bars of chocolate that are like 80% dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
And so I came home, found the wrapper, and was like, oh, no. So I had to I called poison control to rush her to the hospital. They made her throw up. We thought, the doctor basically said she was going to die. You can cut all this out, by the way, if you want. I'm just telling you, like, but it's like, and that's why I can't go to the Star Wars hotel, is my dog ate a Trader Joe's bar of chocolate that was bigger than her.
This episode not brought to you by Trader Joe's.
Lovely chocolate. Wonderful yeah. chocolate. Just don't let your chihuahua manage to. It was
don't
the first,
let your dog eat it. Yeah.
She was a scavenger on the streets. So
yeah, very Ewok-like behavior. Just gonna capture and eat whatever I want. Man, this has been so much fun. This was great. I cannot wait to see what comes down the line. I'm over here as a fan, crossing my fingers for more of you in this role. Again, no one knows what the future is going to be like, but if they said, hey, let's do Han, Chewie, and toddler Ben Solo in a dad carrier as an animated series, I mean, you'd crush it, man. You did so well, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, dude. Yeah, this has been a blast, and of course, I mean, I would love to. I love those characters. I love that world. Everyone that works at Lucasfilm is so sweet and so much cooler than you can even imagine they are. You know, it's crazy how much of a family they are, and to be part of that, even if it's temporary, is so special and means so much to my little lightsaber making heart. Dude, thank you so much for having me on. And of course. Appreciating the game. And what we all did, because it was
absolutely
a labor of love,
and it comes through. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, anything that's coming up that you're allowed to talk about, things that they can find you with right now if they're interested.
Oh, let's see. Well, obviously play Lego Star Wars the Skywalker Saga. You can find me on Instagram at, no one can spell my name, so it doesn't matter, but at AJ Locasio. If you're feeling brave, you can try
scroll down into the description. We'll have you covered. But so if you're like, oh, I don't know how to spell that, it's there, don't worry, we got it.
Okay, but cool. Gremlins Secret of the Mogwai is coming out sometime. I'm Gizmo in that, which is insane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, another amazingly iconic character that I just sort of fell into, which is crazy. What else? Croods is out. I'm so bad at this. I never remember what I'm working on when it's time for me to talk about it. But yeah, there's a new Croods show on Hulu, and I'm sure there are other things, but I just can't remember right now.
Yeah. It'll all be on the websites. It'll be on the websites and the socials. All that stuff will be there. So again, everybody send your thanks and compliments about Lego Han, about Forces of Destiny Han, and all these other projects AJ's way. And then as for this show, you can find me personally at That Alden Diaz, TheAldenDiaz on Instagram and Twitter. And you can follow the show everywhere you get your podcasts, leave reviews, leave stars, all that stuff. Octo Radio, AHCHTO Radio. Rewatch Between Worlds, where we analyze Star Wars Rebels chronologically throughout the show, has returned with myself and Nikki Kumar. That's also here on the podcast feed. Another bastion of amazing voice performances over there with that whole cast. And we'll definitely be talking to some of those people in the future. Nothing is locked down yet, but I mean, how are we not going to get people like Vanessa Marshall and Tia Sarkar on to talk about some of those roles as well? And then Star Wars Celebration is coming up. So expect a coverage of some kind on the podcast. I haven't exactly figured out what I'm going to do, except like drink and love life for 4 days while we're over there talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi. Are you going to Star Wars Celebration, AJ?
I don't think I am, sadly. I wasn't invited, so.
you're going to be there in spirit. We'll make sure that even if you're
project into the
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You just turn around and, hey, kid. And I'll be like, hey, Jake. Yeah. but as for right now, for me, for AJ, for everybody here at Octo Radio.
Punch it, Chewie.